It's one of the defining documents of our history. All persons held as slaves in rebellious areas shall be then, thenceforward, and forever free. We're in the 150th anniversary year of the Emancipation Proclamation, and it's a reminder of something we should never forget, that the United States was once a nation whose economy was largely built on slavery, and that we were once torn in half over the issue by one of the most destructive conflicts the world had ever seen. UH Hilo History Professor Jeff Smith is part of a weekend symposium on Abraham Lincoln and the Proclamation, and he joins us by phone. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
You know, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, I have a question that's always sort of dogged me about the Emancipation Proclamation.
Sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's easy to get the perception that it magically freed the slaves, but most of the people to whom it applied were in a rebel state. So this was a proclamation toward people who were not affected by it. Is that an accurate description?
Somewhat. I mean, it's a variation on it. The proclamation, when it's issued, intentionally doesn't apply to states in rebellion where the Union doesn't have control. It's intentionally targeted towards areas only where you have to have two things. One, be in a state of rebellion, and two, have the Union military have control of the region. So if you don't fall under that category, be it a border state in the north,
or
in the deep south someplace where the Union military still hasn't showed up, slavery is still most definitely in action.
Yeah, that's the perception, I guess, that, I just hate for the perception to get out that it somehow ended slavery. The peculiar institution kept on quite a while after that, didn't it?
Yes, it did. For those people that saw the Lincoln movie, that was part of the reason for that movie and for the 13th Amendment there, was to formally end slavery, because the proclamation itself was freeing the slaves in the Confederate states where the Union held sway there. But as far as a legal standing, it didn't end slavery as a law in the U.S.
Yeah, that's it kind of, because it's over the issue of jurisdiction. I mean, half the country was not under the control of the federal government, yeah?
Yeah, and that's part of the explanation for the Emancipation Proclamation, is that Lincoln is citing his war powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're citing your war powers to justify doing this, it obviously makes it highly problematic then to try and extend it to the border states that are, in fact, not in a state of rebellion. So it's very selective and, purposely so, crafted to really be only in areas where the Union can implement this in the South as somewhat of a punitive measure to the South, but then also to gain a kind of higher calling, if you will, to the war and helped to basically keep foreign recognition from the South.
Well, we now tend to look at the war between the states and the North effort as kind of a moral effort, I think that overlooks the place that slavery had in the economy of the entire nation.
Yeah, slavery was very important for both the North and the South. Even in the North, where slavery is illegal, much of that southern cotton goes to textile manufacturers in the North. Much of what the North produces is sold to the South. So you've got an economic connection there as well. And something that I think a lot of times gets misrepresented as well, too, is that somehow the North is distinctly somehow morally superior to the South in this regard.
Exactly, yeah.
And that there's plenty of people in the North that despise and hate slavery, or what they term slave power, but yet in the same breath are perfectly fine denigrating African Americans and viewing them as racially inferior,
mm-hmm.
and that the two ideas of racial equality and slavery are really separate and for, generations, never the twain shall meet.
Lincoln wasn't really about racial equality, was he?
Initially there, no. He's someone that, by a lot of accounts, kind of evolves on the issue there of slavery and racial equality and kind of comes around to it. But, from the outset of the war there, no, ending slavery was not a war aim. Racial equality from the beginning was not a war aim.
Would he have been willing to end the war between the states without abolishing slavery?
I think early on there may have been a chance for something like that. But fairly soon, that idea, I think, is eschewed for the idea of connecting slavery with it, considering that slavery was such a central causal effect of the war to somehow end the war, but yet not discuss it or not settle the issue, considering that you still have a large percentage of the Western United States that aren't yet states themselves and are just territories and regions that obviously we're going to have to go through statehood to end the war, and then still have this lingering issue that's going to repeatedly come up again in future years. I think he very quickly, as well as plenty of other people, realized that was highly problematic.
Well, also, you know, in the aftermath of, particularly of Harriet Beecher Stowe's novel, right, the little lady whose novel started the big war,
sure.
There's a lot of moral fervor attached. Once the war got underway, that anti-slavery moral fervor kind of got attached to it, didn't it?
Yeah. The moral fervor was definitely there in the abolitionist community.
Sure.
Outside of them, those that fought and championed the war for the sake of the Union, those were the ones that usually it took a little bit longer to kind of, you know, gain a little traction there for them. But fairly quickly, once you start talking about emancipation and it comes out, you know, everyone pretty much, you know, starts rallying to the cause, if you will.
Well, and the only reason I bring these things up at all, Jeff, is that it goes toward the whole idea that history tends to be a lot more ambiguous, you know, that it doesn't go into these good versus evil paradigms, that there are all these nuances to human behavior and the motivations behind government action, yeah?
Yeah, there's plenty of nuance. And again, the idea that somehow the North is morally superior or that the, you know, South was morally bankrupt really overgeneralizes to a fault what was going on, that you have plenty of people in the North that like slavery. You have
sure.
Democrats in the North that want to protect slavery because they're worried, and the usual pitch is to get voters to, you know, vote Democrat, that if you free the slaves are going to come to the North. The slaves are going to take your jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of a pitch. So as a result, usually you get a fair amount of Democrats in the North actively, even during the Civil War, that are okay with slavery.
Well, and didn't you have riots in New York City, you know, sort of race riots of when they started drafting New Yorkers? They sort of turned on the local black population in anger. You kind of got me into this.
Yeah. Race riots happened in a few different areas as far as that goes. And when you start, you know, again, thanks to the Emancipation Proclamation, basically turn those that were being liberated into liberators themselves, and you have African Americans serving in the U.S. military, there's plenty of people in the military at that time, from military officials on down to your just regular service member, that are very unhappy with that and threaten to leave or, you know, basically turn their backs on the war effort now that African Americans are being included. So it's a very, you know, a tumultuous time.
Well, you know, Jeff, when you examine history in greater detail and you find out that it's less cut and dried than it might have been presented to you initially, it gets more interesting, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think when you oversimplify things, and I think that's where sometimes when people discuss slavery and the Civil War from a very kind of cursory standpoint, it can seem all very, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like superficial and very basic and straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But that once you dig past that, all of the subtle nuance and all of the arguments that went back and forth and the kind of what-ifs and the almost could have happened makes it considerably more interesting and more engaging. And when you really start talking about it, that's what gets people excited, in my opinion, and that's what gets people interested in history.
Well, Jeff, it really is a fascinating subject, and thanks very much for talking with us this morning.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Jeffrey Smith is an assistant professor in the Department of History at the University of Hawaii at Hilo. He's part of the James Oliver Horton Symposium on Abraham Lincoln this Saturday in Hilo and this Sunday at UH Manoa, and details are on hpr2.org.